Good morning.
Morning, Sensei.
Something came up just as an aside, which it's like a question that I'd like to throw out there for you to think with and maybe we think about, and maybe we can talk about it next week. I think Jeff said, hold the Indian people in our hearts. And often one of the ways that we express that, we say that we're going to sit with it or we're going to hold somebody in our heart. So I always wonder, what does that mean to sit with something? What does that mean to you personally? What does it mean to sit with something? A friend is dying and we'll say, well, sit with that. Or we have some tough situation that we face and some, you know, the advice would be, well, sit with that. So just give some thought about what does it mean to you to sit with that during the week? So as Bill put out, I'm in a new place. Sounds, I don't know what some sounds mean. So one of the things that I realize and I've learned is that really to speak about compassion, you have to immediately speak about wisdom because they're inseparable. And to separate them can only lead to folly. And to express compassion without wisdom is really not expressing compassion. It's some act that we do regarding somebody over there. So wisdom to me is we empty ourselves. And as we say many times, we empty ourselves of all the things that we think we are, the ways we think the world works. And in emptying ourselves, in becoming empty, we are able to bear witness. We are able to see clearly what it is that's before us. And with that clarity is expressed two ways. One, well, that clarity is what we call wisdom, that place of not knowing, that place of being free of prejudices, and most particularly free of some idea of me, a life that revolves around me. And of course, if there's a me, I have a story. And so if we put aside that story and we empty ourselves, we are then open to becoming wise, to wisdom, to seeing clearly. And then as we know from talks before, if we are in that open place, seeing clearly, we are much more likely to act in a loving, open-hearted way, which we call compassion. There's the act of gassho, where we put our hands together and we bow. And gassho is used in many different ways. Sometimes we gassho to each other as a greeting. And underneath that, what we're really doing is I'm bowing to myself and you, and you're bowing to yourself and me. So it's an acknowledgement of our oneness. And every act of gassho, really underneath that, is a sense of oneness. So somebody does something for us, and we put our hands together and we bow and say, thank you. That's another form of gassho. Sometimes we gassho in respect to another person or to a set of circumstances, or we bow to the altar with respect for the teachings that we are offered through this practice. So there's a saying is that wisdom and compassion come together. And it's like our hands in gassho. And they say that the right hand is wisdom and the left hand is compassion. And when we put our hands together, we unite both of those, that they are really one. And so we bow in that particular way. So as I said, wisdom is emptying ourselves. It's not knowing. And in that place of not knowing, being wide open, as we know from the Zen Peacemaker Order, we bear witness. We become present to a situation without prejudice. And so when all those barriers, all the thoughts and the projections and the stories that we use to define reality, they drop away. And also some idea of who I am, that me, and all the stories that I use in support of the existence of me, that also drops away. So that self-centered way of being is softened, and I'm more likely not to act in a self-centered way, but from a way of connection. So Roshi Kennedy once recounted this story That's a story of a woman who came to Daisan during a retreat. And he asked her, he said, "So how is it going? How's your meditation going?" And she replied, "I'm beginning to see that things are just my stories." And later in the same retreat, she returned to Daisan and Roshi again asked her how it was going. And she replied, "Now I see that everything is just my story." So in Zen, we call dropping our stories the experience, as I've said, of emptiness. And when we drop all our stories, all sense of separation vanishes, and we realize our inherent oneness. And as I have mentioned, we name this experience wisdom. So there's this poem, which I think I've read before by Rumi, but I think it hits the nail on the head in regards to this. And Rumi wrote, "The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along." So compassion is the actualization of wisdom. And it's symbolized by Kuan Yin, who is the Bodhisattva of compassion, who hears the cries of the world. And it's a deep empathy for another's suffering. Deep meaning beyond the stories that we make up that make us feel separate. In true compassion, there is no me. There's just compassion. Now, Bill mentioned something that I had included in my, Jeff mentioned something that I included in my talk, and that came from Bernie Glassman, who, as Jeff mentioned, said, "If I hurt my left hand, the right hand just responds. And that's because I am one body. And the left hand's pain is the right hand's pain. And the right hand just doesn't empathize. It responds." So that's, if you close your eyes for a minute, if they're not already closed, and just imagine that you burn your left hand. Just imagine what happens. I mean, if you're taking something out of the stove and you burn your hand, I mean, it's instant. There's not a moment's thought. There's not any idea of left hand and right hand. It's just tending to the pain of that hand. And so if you sit with that, it really gives you a sense of what functioning as one body means, right? It's a little piece of it, but that's what true compassion is. Functioning from a place of one body, not separated by the story of who we think we are. Now, the Dalai Lama said, "Love and compassion are necessities, not luxuries. And without them, humanity cannot exist." Now, I'm going to go back to the 60s. And there was a poet, Gary Snyder. Some of you may know him if you're old enough. So the poet Gary Snyder talked about the relationship of wisdom to compassion. And in 1968, he wrote a piece called Buddhism and the Coming Revolution. And it was written during the time of heavy American involvement in Vietnam, when people were very committed to social activism. And also, it was also at the same time when many people who had been activists were beginning to practice Eastern religions and becoming pacifists. And many retreated from social involvement and weren't doing anything. They were just sitting around trying to become enlightened. And in response to this, Snyder wrote, "Institutional Buddhism has been conspicuously ready to accept or to ignore the inequalities and tyrannies of whatever political system it found itself under." And he said, "This can be the death of Buddhism because it is death to any meaningful function of compassion. Wisdom without compassion feels no pain." That's a criticism. I'm not going to come down on one side or the other, but it's a criticism that's often made about monks who spend a lifetime living in monasteries and becoming enlightened. And the criticism is, what good is that enlightenment if they don't go out into the world and act with compassion? So Gary Snyder went on to say, "The mercy of the West has been social revolution. The mercy of the East has been individual insight, and that we need both." So in our lineage, John Dyer Lurie took an even stronger stance when he said, I don't care how many transmissions you have or how many certificates you can pile up. If compassion and wisdom are not manifesting in your life, your realization is not real. So that's why I often say you don't have to be enlightened to live an enlightened life. You don't need to be certified as enlightened to live a life of connection and compassion and wisdom. So on the other hand, you know, action uninformed by wisdom frequently results in self-centered folly. It's the idea that it's me here helping you over there, right? Oh, you poor person, I feel so bad for you. But if I experience it in that way, that's a dualistic way of approaching it. It's not really the connection that I'm talking about. So as I'm saying, it's me here helping you over there. It makes the giver feel good, but it can shame or diminish the one being helped. Because sometimes that wanting to do good is really looking down at that poor chap who needs my help. And that way of seeing things from duality usually lacks skillful means, usually lacks the wisdom to respond to a situation appropriately. And so the example would be a homeless drug addict is sitting on the street and he reaches out his hands and says he's hungry. So the person walking by hands him $5 and walks off feeling pretty good that he or she helped this man who was hungry. But the man, it turns out, he's a drug addict, and he takes the $5 to go and cop some drugs for himself. So that act of just giving because you felt bad for somebody lacked wisdom. Now, wisdom in that situation might be to stop and engage the person. Talk with the person and you get a feeling for what they need, you know, in this place of connection, in this place of wisdom, this openness without drawing any conclusions. It may reveal itself that this person is going to take your money and use it in a way that you didn't intend. So a more appropriate way, a place of wisdom might be to say, listen, stay here. I'm going to go get you a sandwich because you're hungry. So that would be the difference between wisdom and compassion versus entering into the situation from a place of separation. So with compassion, there is no sense of self, no sense of doer or the thing that the doer is doing. It's the direct, selfless act of responding, right? Not reacting, but responding. It's one hand reaching out to the other hand. One human being reaching out to the other human being from that place of interconnection, like one hand coming to the aid of the other hand. So this practice, our Zazen and our Zen practice, is really a gift which brings to us an open heart and a great sense of intimacy or oneness with all beings, with all of life. So this practice, this daily sitting, this weekly sitting, the retreats that we do, our commitment to this practice really makes us more prepared and more clear to live a life of wisdom and compassion. If we're intimate with some situation or some person, we are much more likely to act appropriately with compassion. At the same time, the practice calls to us to be responsible for the world beyond ourselves. And that response takes into account who we are, the circumstances under which we live. And, you know, somebody may give $500 million to people who are suffering in India. Someone else may be able to send a dollar. But each act may be done from the same place of connection. So there's a responsibility to act in the world, to take our practice off the cushion and act with compassion in the world, from the smallest way to the largest way. So thank you for listening.